Welcome to Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and our flagship station, our show, CITR 101.9 FM.
You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. You got a friend.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whoever and wherever you are. If you're listening to us on our podcasts or on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Community Living Show. I'm Kelly. We're supposed to have a special guest on in just a moment. Michael Rubin is not here right now, so I'm going to play you some bit of Autism Speaks. This Autism Speaks is on June 2nd on YouTube. This is a presentation of Matt and Ed Spencer speak on employment for people with autism, like myself. So here is the interview, I wouldn't say the interview, but the presentation of the employment for the people of autism.
I would like to introduce Matt and his dad, Ed Asner, who go to great lengths for the lives of people like me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I have ever witnessed.
Calling Langham Field. Come in, please. Come in, please.
This is Langham Field. Go ahead.
You don't have an identification on him yet, do you?
Not yet.
I'm a German doctor.
I mean, she really thinks you're something.
Well, don't act so surprised, Mary.
Oh, well, no.
Just because I don't flaunt it doesn't mean I don't have it.
Whatever it is you're hiding, I mean to get it out in the light.
No.
Well, I gotta help you cross something.
No, I'm doing fine.
The dads of autistic kids get a chance to practice what they should be practicing even if the kids weren't autistic. It is like a jolting reminder of what they should be and what they should do.
Matthew Asner, the son of actor Ed Asner, is the Southern California executive director of the organization Autism Speaks.
We need a national plan to deal with autism. We need an autism czar. We need to take care of our children and adults.
For awareness sake, get out there and say, my child has autism.
Yeah.
We need to draw attention to this. We need to get out there and make sure that parents understand what it is and what to look for.
I just want to say it's... Come here.
Do I have to?
Yeah, I want you to hold yourself up here.
All right.
I just want to say it's an honor to stand up here with my father. And one of my best friends. My compadre.
Oh, yeah.
My partner in good and evil.
Mostly evil.
Mostly evil. No, he's an amazing guy, and I took the job at Autism Speaks about 4 years ago, and never thought I would have a partner like I have with him. He's been an incredible partner, someone I rely on for advice. He counsels me. I cry on his shoulder. I get frustrated. He hears my frustration. And that's enough about us. What we really want to talk about is employment. And, you know, Wayne Fogelsang was up here earlier talking about... he was talking about the minimum wage increase. And what a great thing that is for people, right? Great thing for people to be moving up in the world like they should be. But what it does mean, and he mentioned a little bit about this, but I just want to kind of expand on it a little bit. What it really means is that a lot of the cuts that happened in 2008 really are going to hurt a lot more right now. So we have to make sure that we write Governor Brown, yeah, and that we let him know that he needs to raise the budget to accommodate for the minimum wage increase, especially with nonprofits, especially for organizations that get their funds from the government, okay?
That was Matt and Enser speaking on the employment for people with autism. I have a special guest who is probably no stranger of ours. She's the MLA for Vancouver Mount Pleasant right now, but you're also campaigning for the Vancouver East for Libby Davies. Am I right, Jenny?
I'm also the candidate for the NDP for the Vancouver East riding in the upcoming federal election. That's correct.
Yeah. So this is Jenny Kwan who is speaking with us right now. Now, I have some couple of questions. I know Michael Rubin isn't here because of traffic and stuff. I know he lives near White Rock, and that's a kind of a long distance of a ways from where he lives and comes over to Vancouver. So it's a long commute for that matter. Couple of questions. I know on your, they go to the writing when you were elected, and well, as a campaign candidate for the national running. One of the questions I wanted to ask was, you're hoping to help out with the people in the riding of Vancouver East, and it's part of my autism that's bothering me a few times. I know the situation with the family health care and the family homes are issued into the writing of a possibility of, I should say, more nationally and more most of your promises on that. I was just wondering on self-advocate people, what are your kind of goals on that kind of situation?
Well, I think one of the key things for people in our community is to find voice. Mm-hmm. And self-advocates would certainly be a important piece within that. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, we have a situation where, services are being reduced. There's lack of funding. Mm-hmm. And communities, nonprofits particularly, are not having enough resources to provide the services that's critically needed in our community. And so as a result, people are sort of put into that position, mm-hmm. More and more having to advocate for themselves. And one of the great things about the Community Living BC mm-hmm. sector is that people in that community are fantastically strong in self-advocacy, not only for themselves, and they also with their peers as well. Right. And so I think that, we need to ensure that people in our community have voice, and particularly those who may not be able to access mm-hmm. the kind of services that they need. Or they know of someone who don't have the kind of services that they need. So self-advocacy is paramount, and those the stories that are shared are incredibly moving and incredibly compelling. And when people hear about these stories, it's almost, you kind of have to shake your head, right, to say, like, how is it that they could be treated in such a way that, most people that I know are absolutely astounded when they find out the lack of resources and support from the government.
Now, you're a critic of CLBC, and what is happening out front on what's happening with CLBC?
Well, in the area of CLBC, there are a number of things that are going on. In this year's budget from the government, while there was a lift in the area, that said, it is still not meeting the need. The truth of the matter is that we have an increase in caseload. We have a situation where people are aging, and for parents who are aging, who care for their children, is an increasing concern. And then, of course, as people age, they also need more services. That's right. Sort of part of par for the course, you know. And so on the federal side, we actually don't have a health accord with the provinces. In fact, with the federal government basically opting out in signing on to this health accord, we're going to, across the provinces, we're going to be short some $36 billion in healthcare funding. And that's a major, major hit to our various sectors. So on the provincial side, the government, while they gave the budget a slight lift, I would say, but you know that lift does not pay for the contractual agreements that the government has signed on to through the collective agreements, and so the nonprofits themselves are going to have to struggle to sort of find resources to fill that hole, which they're mandated to have to pay, that the government negotiated on their behalf on these collective agreements. The second thing is, with an increasing caseload and aging population, you're going to have a shortfall. You're going to have a shortfall, and that means that people in the community living sector are not going to get the resources that they need. The government talks a nice talk, the BC Liberals talks a nice talk about inclusion. The reality is, when you have funding shortfall, by virtue of that, you create exclusion. That's the reality that people in the community living BC sector are faced with.
I'm just going to interrupt there. I'm going to take a short break, and we're going to come right back in a moment with more Jenny Kwan. Michael just arrived here, so we're going to come back and set up the whole scene for it. This is Community Living here on the NCIA Radio Networks and also on the on the campus radio side, CITR 101.9.
Tune in to the Red Jam Slam Radio Festival in celebration of Aboriginal Week from June the 17th to June the 21st. The festival will be broadcast across Canada on 7 different stations.
Tune in to
www.ckdu.ca or at 88.1 FM in Halifax, Nova Scotia. www.chuo.ca or at 89.1 FM in Ottawa, Ontario.
www.ckuw.ca or at 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
www.ckxu.ca or at 88.3 FM in Lethbridge, Alberta.
And in Vancouver, British Columbia, tune in to
www.cjsf.ca or at 90.1 FM.
www.coopradio.org or at 100.5 FM.
And www.citr.ca or at 101.9 FM.
This year, listen live from 1 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time from June the 17th to the 21st. Check out redjamslam.com.
And we are back on the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks, National Community Radio, and National Campus Radio Associations. And of course, you just heard the Red Jam Slam Society, which is Gennarji O'Sullivan, who is a really dear to us of our show. So
yeah, if everybody could please, on our Facebook page, we do have a link to their Indiegogo page, and help them crowdfund to make it an awesome event for Red Jam Slam.
So. And you're involved in that as well.
Yeah, I shot the video and put together the Indiegogo page.
That's so great. Well, when you're listening to the Community Living Show, we're talking with Jenny Kwan. She just here before you did, Michael. So I was just wondering if you have any questions to Jenny as well.
I've heard that it's exciting times for you. that that your political career is moving forward and in the federal direction. Is that right?
Well, that's correct. I am still the sitting MLA for Vancouver Mount Pleasant, but I also recently just got the nomination to be the NDP candidate for Vancouver East in the upcoming federal election. So I am very excited about that. And when I thought about why I would, whether or not I would actually go into the federal arena, I thought about it long and hard, and it was a very difficult decision. I love Vancouver Mount Pleasant. I love the job that I have. But at the end of the day, after 19 years, I thought to myself, what were the things that brought me into politics in the beginning? And they were issues that had national import, national affordable housing. In 1993, the federal government, the then federal Liberal government, actually canceled the National Housing Program. And that just propelled me into political action like there was no tomorrow. I was doing sit-ins and petitions and protests and so on. And to this day, the safe, secure, affordable housing is still very much an issue for us here in Van East, but not just in Van East, across the country, indeed.
Yeah. We all need a safe, affordable place to live.
Oh, no question. In fact, if there was a national affordable housing program since 1993, so that is to say if it was not canceled from the national government, we would have had an additional 600,000 units of affordable housing across the country. Just imagine that for a moment. And I was just talking to Libby Davies at her housing roundtable just this past weekend, and she started to advocate in our community back in the 70s. And she said at that time she did not remember having a person who's homeless in our community. I mean, there were crappy single-room occupancy hotels that they were fighting against, but not homelessness, certainly not like this. And I started my work as an advocate in the community in the early 1990s, and I used to be one of those volunteers that would go and do the homelessness count, and we would scour the streets in the middle of the night and look behind bushes and all of that to see how many people might be homeless in our community. And at that time, you know, it'd be hard-pressed for us to find, you know, around 10 people, right? But now in our community, I mean, homelessness is a crisis in our community. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we actually lost the National Housing Program. And we were talking about inclusion earlier. And inclusion, what does that mean? A lot of people with in the community living community are having challenges, and they are dealing with challenges in the question of inclusion. Why? Because they can't find affordable, accessible housing. And that's a real issue, and is a real issue for everyone in our society. And so when I thought about, you know, running federally, I thought, yeah, I'm going to do that, because the national government cannot be let to be gotten away with providing affordable housing as part of that solution with all levels of government, with the community, with the nonprofit community, and the private sector. And I feel very strongly about that. And aside from the federal Liberals canceling the National Housing Program back in 1993, you now have Stephen Harper, who's going to actually, who's going to end the subsidies for cooperatives, co-op housing. Right? And that is going to be a huge hit, and you're going to lose further affordable housing units that exist in our communities today. So I just thought, you know, enough is enough, and I'm going to take this to Ottawa, and I'm going to fight like heck for our community here on something as basic as a affordable, safe, secure, affordable housing
access. I hate to say this, sometimes the most basic is the most important.
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely. I mean, the most basic, I mean, if you don't have housing, that's your foundation of your well-being, not only just for you as an individual, for your families, but for society on the whole, you know? And so, you know, we're back at that level where we're just fighting for some very basic rights. And so I want to be there. I want to bring our strong East Van voice over to Ottawa. And I'm going to do everything that I can to get that National Housing Program in place and so that we can start dealing with these basic foundational questions for people's well-being.
So when they ended the National Housing Program, Affordable Housing Program, was the idea to allow each individual community to take up the fight and provide housing? How what was the plan behind that?
The National Housing Program basically The federal government allocated a certain amount of money to develop housing in each province. And the provincial government at that time partnered with the federal government along with the city. And so all three levels of government were working together to develop affordable housing. So back in the day, we used to develop a minimum of 600 units of affordable housing in the province each year. And so that's through the different partnerships. And then, so then that got cancelled. Mm-hmm. Now, the province of British Columbia, under the NDP government, provincially, continued on with that program anyway, even though they lost the federal money. They continued to develop 600 units of affordable housing. And towards the end of the NDP's mandate, we were actually able to stretch the money by leveraging money from the nonprofit sector, from the faith sector, from right. the private sector, etc. And we actually were building 1,200 units of affordable housing a year. So we were doing pretty good. Then, of course, in 2001, the BC Liberals came in. And one of the first acts after they formed government was to cancel the affordable housing units that were allocated and slated for development. And since that time, we have not had a comprehensive housing program in the province of British Columbia, and most of the stuff is kind of hodgepodge. And every now and again, the government sort of threw some money here and there. And their focus now is really centered around providing some shelters, in my view. And, they would come in and fix some SROs, single room occupancy hotels, and do that kind of stuff. But really, for all intents and purposes, we actually don't have a proper affordable housing program.
Can we even estimate how many, it's like, not just single people, but families with children who are actually homeless?
Well, I mean, that's the crazy thing about it. You have the province of British Columbia refusing to participate in the process of figuring out the baseline of what we need to address, and that is the people that are homeless in our communities today. So while there is a homelessness count that the city of Vancouver does every year, and they address only, in my view, the very surface level, what they call street homeless, so the people that you can visibly see who are homeless. Mm-hmm. But there are, scores of people who are homeless, who are couch surfing, who are living in unviable environments that's not sustainable, and they're not counted. Mm-hmm. In my own office, currently in Vancouver, Mount Pleasant, I can't tell you how many families have come into my office, an individual who's come into my office, mm-hmm. to tell me that they don't have a proper home, they're couch surfing, they're just sort of going from here to there, and many of them are individuals who are single parents, mm-hmm. and for them to successfully live in an environment and to have their children back with them is the requirement of having proper housing, and they don't have that. And because of that, they're separated from their children. And they're just, it's like a crime, you know? Like to me, when when these stories and these situations are brought to my attention, I get really upset about it. I'm a mom, and I can't imagine what that is like to be separated from your children, mm-hmm. and because you don't have the resources to provide for them. And there's just something very wrong about that. And so, I'm a strong advocate on these fronts. I write endless letters. I talk to the ministers. I go public from time to time mm-hmm. about these issues and to pressure the government. At the end of the day, what's clear to me is that you need every single level of government working together and being dedicated to resolving this issue. Homelessness, to me, is not like, an impossible thing to do. We know what the solution is.
Yes.
Build that housing. And you can mm-hmm. house people, provide the support so that they can live successfully in it, and then we'll get somewhere.
Yeah. What kind of effect do you think that, because here in the Lower Mainland, the cost of real estate is absolutely ridiculous. It's like
almost an arm and a leg.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it is an arm and a leg, quite honestly. Yeah. When the average house is going to run you at least $500,000, it's like,
yeah.
That's not affordable to most people.
No, so I mean, the question of affordability in terms of housing, there's a whole spectrum about that now, mm-hmm. right? You're talking about for the folks who are homeless, right?
Yes.
All the way to people who require subsidized housing to the people who are in co-ops, to renters, because access to market rental now is almost impossible, and the cost is increasing like crazy, and people being rental evicted like crazy, and that's impacting folks as well in a very big way. And then, of course, you have the entry level of affordable housing in terms of home ownership, and now home ownership is almost out of reach. In fact, it is out of reach, I would argue, for a lot of people who grew up in their neighborhoods, and they will no longer be able to live in those neighborhoods because, A, either they can't find a place to rent because the market rent is too expensive. There's no affordable housing that's accessible to them. Co-op housing is like, you know, the programs are ending there as well. And they can't buy into the market. And so there's a whole array of issues there that needs to be addressed. And most recently, I wrote to the Minister of Finance about a little over a month ago, actually, asking the Minister of Finance to if they collected any data on foreign ownership and its impact into our housing market. And, of course, a month later, I find out through the estimates debate in the legislature that, in fact, the government does not collect this data. So I've asked for the government to go about collecting the data and also collecting the information on what other jurisdictions have done in addressing this issue of affordability.
What about families with low incomes, with real low incomes?
Yeah, it's a huge struggle, right? Families with low income in the nonprofit subsidized housing side, you know, the government is not building affordable housing. They certainly they have not built family housing for a very, very long time. And so people can't access units that are large enough to for a family. And so then you go to the market, right, housing on the market side. And, you know, you're looking at a, you know, 2-3 bedroom. The average rent in Vancouver is somewhere between like $1,200 to $1,500.
Yeah.
If you're low income, you can't afford it. It brings back to me, it brings home this question. When we first immigrated here, back in 1976, I come from a family of eight. So we're a large family. And we weren't wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. In Hong Kong, we lived in subsidized housing. We were okay, but, you know, but we weren't wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. When we came here, our family of eight, we rented, you know, basement suite to basement suite. We just went from basement suite to basement suite, 600-700 square feet. That's what we lived in for a family of eight, right? We kind of just piled on top of each other. And so for me, the housing question is worse than what it used to be back in the 1970s. And we need to sort of get on with doing, you know, doing a lot more than what we have done and doing a decent job of it. Because as I said, housing, safe, secure, affordable housing for anyone is the foundation of their well-being and is the foundation of the well-being of our communities.
So can I ask how your office and you personally plan on taking up this fight and making affordable housing available to people?
Well, in my office as the MLA, I advocate continuously for this. I badger the heck out of the minister about this, both on an individual basis for individual cases, but also on the bigger picture in terms of a comprehensive program. I've written also to the federal government. I've joined with the community in protests and petitions and all of those things, and I'll continue to do that. On the federal side, as the candidate and the federal NDP, will have a very strong program around affordable housing. There's no question about it, and the details of that will come out in the days ahead. But yeah, for us, for the NDP, we have never, ever walked away from affordable housing. Has always been on our radar, a strong pillar of our fundamental basic tenets of moving forward in every single election, both provincially and nationally. And this will be no different.
I don't know if you've got the pleasure of meeting Jack Layton at the time. What was his inspirational of as a leadership of the national NDP?
Oh, well, thank you for bringing that up. In fact, Jack Layton, you know, I met him many, many times, the late Jack Layton. And when he ran for leader, you know, it was my honor to actually support him and to worked on his BC part of the campaign as the that leadership went forward. When Jacques was, people will remember, a counselor in Toronto,
right.
So big Toronto, and he was also with the FCM, the Federation of Municipalities,
right.
And it was actually Jacques who brought up the issue of a national affordable housing program as an issue to take up and really propelled it forward at the FCM. And coming out of that, you know, people are really strongly advocating for that, and it really was Jacques, in my view, Jacques had a lot to do with that in driving through that. And so for the NDP nationally is the, as I said, it's the backbone of New Democrats. It's our core value. There's no question about that. And that legacy will continue on with Thomas Mulcair, who is our current leader with the federal NDP. And that going forward in this federal election will be a strong piece as well for our platform in advocating for housing. And and if we were to form government, I have no hesitation in saying this, that, you know, there will once again be a national affordable housing program across this country.
It's very needed. Yes.
And on that note, I'm going to have to take a break. I know we had about 10 minutes behind schedule on our scheduled thing. So we're going to come right back and talk some more with Jenny Kwan here on the Community Leader Show. Yeah.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Your favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com. Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Welcome to Community Leaving Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks and our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Kelly Rayburn, along with Michael Rubin, and we have a special guest from Vancouver MLA, Jenny Kwan. And we were, we were talking about some family housing and some issues on the NDP in the past. What are your goals? What other types of goals, if you were in campaigning for this national federal election that is going to be happening in October? What other kinds of things?
Well, there are many things. When we're talking about family, the other piece that's really important to me around supporting families is actually a national childcare program. We don't have one. Quebec is the only province that actually has a comprehensive universal child care program. And it's the envy, I would say, probably of every single province. And we need a national child care program. Why do I say that? We know, I mean, there's study upon study, like bookshelves full of reports talking about the importance of early childhood development. You know, children in those early years, they're like sponges. And they learn everything. And if you put them in a good environment where they're fully supported, you see the difference in terms of their development and the value of that. And that's really, really important to me. But a lot of families cannot afford a child care program because it's really expensive. It could run, you know, up to $1,200, $1,500 a month. And literally, for some families, you're talking about having to get a second job just to support child care. And that's not okay. So we, so for us nationally, Thomas Mulcair, our national leader, has already announced to say that we want to see a national child care program, up to $15 a day for a universal child care program. Mm-hmm. And for British Columbia, the child care advocates are calling for a $10 a day solution. And we can do it. We can do it, and it's a good investment. It's good for the children. It's good for the families. And in fact, it's good for the country's economy. In addition to that, we're also calling for $15 a day in terms of minimum wages. We want to see minimum wages raised across the country to $15 a day. $15 an hour. $15 an hour. So it's our what we call our 15-15 campaign, right?
Yes.
And so that's another piece as well. Affordability comes with, the ability to earn a living.
Mm-hmm.
And, $10-$12
yeah.
An hour is deficient. And even 15 at that is not optimal, but is better. And we're wanting to move towards that direction where people can actually earn a decent living.
In the day when I was, in my young during my adoption years, when I was 8 and 9, most national governments gave you a benefits check of a family allowance benefits situation. And I guess once you grow older and once more mature, those kind of family benefits are no longer there. I'm assuming that the governments have changed and they have axed the family benefits kind of situation. If you were in the NDP power on the national running, what kind of family benefits would you receive?
Well, one of the things that is there right now is, in the last federal budget that was just introduced, of course, is this whole notion of income splitting.
Mm-hmm.
And the taxation policies that the Harper government has brought in basically skews towards supporting the highest income earners.
Mm-hmm.
They're the people who are going to benefit the most. Mm-hmm. With their change in the taxation policy, with the income splitting, for example. And what the NDP is saying is that we're saying no to that.
Right.
And in fact, we need to make sure that, middle income, lower income families are better supported.
Mm-hmm.
And they ought to be the first priority in terms of moving forward on that. And so that's the direction that we want to move in. And of course, the programs that we want to bring in as well is to support the middle income and lower income families and individuals so that their quality of life could improve, so that opportunities for them would open up,
right,
so that they have the opportunity to maximize their potential. That's really what we want to do.
Michael?
Okay. I want to go back to the $15 an hour minimum wage. obviously, there has to be a plan in place so that the small businesses out there, at $15 an hour, becomes a struggle for them to afford employees, especially full-time employees and adult employees who really need that full-time employment.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, this debate's gone around and around from the business community time and again, right? When the economy is performing poorly, they cannot afford to increase the minimum wages. That's what they say. And then when the economy is performing well, they also say, oh, no, but not now. We're not ready, right? There never is a time for businesses to be ready. I mean, that's the truth of it, because this conversation has gone on for years and years, mm-hmm, and years. So now, I think what business office said to me is that they need certainty. They need to know what's going to be done. And mm-hmm, so the NDP is giving notice, right, mm-hmm, to say if this is what we intend to do, and what businesses need to do is to plan for that, right? And so, and the other thing you got to keep in mind is this: when you hire people in your community, with a higher wage, $15 mm-hmm, an hour, what do? They actually spend that money back in the community. I'll bet you for those small businesses that are really worried about, if people are earning more monies in their own community, they are going to likely see their businesses increase because people are coming back to those businesses and spending money. People who make $15 an hour are not taking their earning or and wages going to Bermuda or anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. They're not taking it out of the province or out of the community. Most of them will be actually spending it right back in their own neighborhoods, mm-hmm. supporting their own neighborhoods, generating the economic activities. That's mm-hmm. the backbone. Small businesses, you're absolutely right. They're the backbone of our economy. So on the flip side of that as well, what the NDP is also proposing to support the small business community is to also reduce their taxes, to reduce the small business taxes as well, to actually provide supports to them.
That's the first, since I've heard about the $15 minimum wage, you're the first person to make sense of it, saying, no, the government will provide a tax credit or something like that.
Yeah, so it'll be a tax credit reduction.
So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, we'll raise the minimum wage, and then to those small businesses, we're also going to give you a break somehow so that you can make it affordable to hire employees.
Correct. So then, you know, it's two-pronged. And we really believe, too, that when people get a higher wage in their own local communities, in their minimum wage jobs, they're going to be spending that money in the communities. But for small businesses as well, we'll be reducing their taxes, too.
As a BC perspective with the MLA, the minimum wage is what? How much? 15, is it?
Or no, 12.
12, okay, 12 per hour. But you want to make it the... including British Columbia as well, make it as $15 per hour?
For the country, we want to make it $15 an hour. So that's a national program from Thomas Mulcair. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the whole program does actually make sense with the tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you said, you want to protect the middle class, and a lot of the middle class are also small business owners.
Yeah. And you know, case in point, I grew up with parents who made minimum wages. My mother retired in her best job. And what was that? She was a dishwasher at a restaurant. And she graduated from being a farm worker, making $10 a day when we first arrived, and then to being a minimum wage earner and being a dishwasher. And she retired with that job. And I was raised with parents who made minimum wage salaries.
I totally understand that. My mother was a housekeeper. So and we were very lucky in the fact that all of us kids, we did actually go to private school, and it's like she worked hard.
Yeah.
And we went to university and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, we were very lucky in that we had a mother who worked that hard. And it sounds like your mom was the same.
Oh, there's no question. I was very, very lucky. All of us were. I mean, they made huge sacrifices to immigrate to this country. And my mom has a grade 6 level of education. My dad has a grade 10, grade 11 level of education. They made the big move for their children. There was no question. Like, you know, there was no way that we could have afforded to live in Hong Kong, where if you wanted to get decent education, you had to get into the private school system, which they could not afford for 6 children. And then also for health care as well. I was, as it happens, a sickly child in Hong Kong. I got bronchitis every year with the typhoon season. And, and you know, it was expensive. And they knew that in order for their children to have a better opportunity in life, they needed to make this move, and they did. And so, and yes, my parents worked hard. Your mom worked hard to support their children. And what do people want? Like, I keep coming back to think about this basic question. What is it that people want? They want better opportunities for their children. They want their children to do better than what they had, right? That's what a lot of immigrants tell me. That's my own family history and experience. And everybody wants that. And so how do we achieve that? You need a government, nationally, provincially, municipally, who actually cares about everybody, who will look at these issues and bring forward policies that will support all families and every individual so that they can maximize their potential, so that they could succeed. And when I think about the national piece, there are many, many policies that the government can bring in to work in partnership with the provincial government and the municipal government and members of the community and the private sector. director. We haven't had that for a very long time. Stephen Harper is very single-minded, in my view, about his approach, and who's on his priority list are the big corporations, the wealthiest, you know, top 1% of the population. And there's just something really, really wrong with that. And to me, that's almost un-Canadian. In fact, it is un-Canadian, the Stephen Harper approach.
I have to agree with you on that.
I, too, was a dishwasher at times. I did it in both, one in downtown and one at the venue for the Olympics, so I did both. And as you can see, dishwasher can be very stressful, and it can be really, it has to be quick and easy to do. So as for myself, I've learned the experience as a dishwasher myself.
Yeah, and I was a dishwasher, too. At one point, so we've all lived that, and you know, my point is this, right? It doesn't matter what your goals are, as long as you have an opportunity to strive towards the goal. And for my mom, basically, her big goal was to raise the children so that they have a better chance to succeed in life than she did, and that's what she did. And she was, and it was okay, you know, for her to be a dishwasher, and she achieved her goal and then some. Right. Yeah. And so for me, the big thing is this, giving everybody that opportunity to succeed. That's what we should strive for. And that, to me, is the Canadian way.
Yes, that is.
I guess on that note, we'll take a break. We'll come right back. This is Community Living.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
Could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Come on, baby.
Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you and I rock with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rells, Jamal Steeles, and Horsepower. You know what it is, right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CRTR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up.
And we're back on the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm Kelly Rayburn, along with Michael Rubin and Jenny Kwan. So, final thoughts, Michael.
Well, you were on our show a couple of years ago. I guess you were running again for the Mount Pleasant. It was Mount Pleasant, right?
A couple of years ago, it would have been for Mount Pleasant then.
And then you were very much so in favor of supporting the basic people of the community, the small business owners, the person that really has to work hard to bring home that living. And it's good to hear that you're still wanting to go that way. And I'm sure that your mother, being the dishwasher, she's probably looking at like, yes, that's my little girl out there fighting to make our community better.
Well, absolutely. I mean, why did I enter into politics, right? And it's all about that, mm-hmm. you know. For each of us, it's not just only our own well-being, individual well-being, but it's all of us together. And the First Peoples of this land, the Aboriginal community, I've mm-hmm. learned so much from them. And one thing that they've really taught me is this. We're all connected, you know. Mm-hmm. We are really of one universe. We're all connected in some way. And in supporting each other, when we all succeed, when we all succeed, we live in a better world. Mm-hmm. And that's what politics to me is about. All of these issues are connected. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time when I was an advocate in the community that I didn't think that I always just thought, oh, politics, I have no time for it. but now I realize every single thing that we do, everything in our lives impact us in some way and has something to do with the political decisions that politicians make. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's really important to bring democracy into full force to ensure that everybody has the opportunity to fully participate. And then in terms of government policies, what do they mean? First, I think we need to ensure that the very basics are addressed. And we talked about housing in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, the other issue that's really critical to that is addressing the issue of poverty as well. Mm-hmm. Lifting people out of poverty, supporting people so that they can have a decent life and opportunity to succeed. All of that stuff is tied into it. And then, of course, tying into that is the economy, right? How do you make the economy click? And you actually put a nail in the head when you talked about small business community. They are the economic engine of our province, of our country, and we need to support them too so that when they succeed, all of us succeed.
Yeah. Kelly?
Oh, I'm just sorting through some stuff here. I'm mostly a big fan on transportation, and the other issues that are possibly of dealing with cutbacks is the fact that Via Rail could be cut back on passenger cross-country. Kind of like a passenger cross-country railway situation, and I know that most national governments are always talking about those kind of things. And then, of course, there was also another possibility of CBC Radio and CBC Communications that are also possibly of doing cutbacks as well by the Stephen Harper government. And what are your reactions on those types of national companies with that
name? On the question around CBC, mm-hmm. The NDP is already on the public record with our national leader, Thomas Mulcair, to say that if we should form government, mm-hmm. We would reinstate the funding for CBC. Communicating with the electorate and having different access to different radio stations and different media outlets is really important mm-hmm. In terms of that diversity. And CBC is kind of like a Canadian icon.
It is.
And to lose that would be a huge blow. And so we're on the record around that. On the other question around overall transportation, actually, interestingly, funny enough, you should say that, the NDP is also wanting to support a national program on infrastructure building for transportation. So mm-hmm. here locally, we have the transit referendum. We have mm-hmm. no idea what that's going to look like.
And the referendum just passed. So
yeah. And so, you know, it's really important we actually build that infrastructure, because as you have more and more people coming into our provinces, into our cities, mm-hmm. you need to be able to move people efficiently in a good way. And the only way to do that is if you build that infrastructure. And that goes beyond, of course, locally, but across the country. So one of the things that, in fact, Olivia Chow brought forward when she was the MP in Toronto there, Spadina, she actually had a private member's bill mm-hmm. For a national infrastructure program for transportation. Mm-hmm. And I fully support that myself, because you actually need to connect this country from coast to coast to coast, and you need to have access to those infrastructure networks for it to work. Mm-hmm. And then into the major cities, you need to have good transportation, modes of transportation to move people around and to move the goods around as well.
Hmm. For very
and
true.
And I know a lot of people were talking about C-51. Was it Bill C-51?
Yes, Bill C-51. Absolutely.
What are your respects on Bill C-51?
Well, I personally, along with Thomas Mulcair and the National NDP, are absolutely against C-51. Mm-hmm. Why do we say that? You know, the Harper government is using fear and to basically take away our civil rights and our civil liberties under the guise of C-51. And we have said no strongly to that. Not only have we said no to it, we voted against it. My mm-hmm. federal colleagues in Parliament voted against Bill C-51. Unlike the federal liberals who say they're against C-51, then proceeded to actually vote for Bill C-51 in mm-hmm. Parliament. And so we're not going to be Harper light. We're going to say no to Harper, and we said no to Bill C-51. And I'm very worried about Bill C-51 because under the guise of that, we're going to lose, I'm very fearful, our privacy. I'm very fearful of the potential effects of racial profiling and the implications for that in our community. And I just, again, you know, it's un-Canadian.
It's,
you
know,
it's not
thing.
The way to go.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not the way to go. But that's what the Harper government's doing, and with the support of the federal liberals.
Yeah. I'm sure you have, in some way, shape, or form, have experienced racial profiling.
Well, you know.
I have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, some of the stories that I've heard from people kind of takes your breath away, right? And it's not okay. It's not okay. And we shouldn't, as parliamentarians, be bringing forward laws that will facilitate that. No. And that's what, in my view, Bill C-51 does. In fact, in the provincial parliament, just sort of segueing back to the provincial for a minute, in the last day of the BC legislature, I brought forward a private member's bill, which I think is long overdue, calling on the government to erase and to basically erase the covenants, the racist and discriminatory covenants that were on properties, on title,
right.
And in the deeds, because there was a time that the, you know, anybody from the ethnic minority community were disallowed to own property, to live in property, to lease property, and all of those covenants still exist in titles and deeds. Now, they were made null and null effect in 1985, but they still exist. So when you do a title transfer, you go to look at the old deeds, it is still there. To me, that language should be removed. It belongs in history books, and that's
right.
where they should stay, where we learn those lessons, but they should be gone and should be scrubbed clean. And so I moved the private member's bill to say exactly that. You know, this country was built with, you know, the multicultural community. We are a multicultural community.
Okay.
And so I think that it's high time that we move in that direction. Saying that we're going to apologize for historical wrongs is one thing, and is important, but you need to follow up with action to make those words meaningful. And part of that, in my view, is to bring forward legislation to address these kinds of issues. And for me, the racist covenants Removal Act was tabled in the last day in the BC legislature, mm-hmm. and I would like the government to enact that.
Mm. Okay, so, and then, of course, your website is jennykwan.ca. Is that your website for any information?
Yes, if you go Jenny Kwan MLA.
JennyKwanMLA.ca?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's the MLA site.
The MLA site, correct.
That is correct.
And well, I'll have you all the best ways to support you and help you get to that office?
Well, I would love for people to come and support me and stay tuned on the Van East, Jenny Kwan for Van East website,
yeah.
which is my federal candidacy website.
Okay.
Love it if people would sign up to be a volunteer. We're going to have, you know, I'm hitting the doorsteps. We're going to have to hit the doorsteps to door knock, phone people, to fundraise, and all of those things that make a campaign sort of successful. And so I'm taking nothing for granted. I'm going to work really hard in this upcoming federal election, and I would love it if people came and joined me to keep Van East orange so we can bring all these important issues over to Parliament. And with your support and your hard work, we're going to elect the first NDP government ever in the Canadian history and elect Thomas Mulcair as the premier, as the prime minister.
Prime minister.
The prime minister.
Yeah.
And John Horgan as the premier, but elect Thomas Mulcair as the Prime Minister of Canada.
That's great.
Yay.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful. Of course, stay tuned for next week's show. We will have another guest on for next week. Until then, this has been The Community Living. Michael, anything?
I'm hoping that we'll have another small business consultant on next week, and he's going to talk about some of the benefits of disability, supporting disabilities through small business, where he helped put specific systems in place to make it easier to run your business,
right?
And it will make it easier for us to support these businesses.
All right. On that note, we'll be back next week, same time, same station. Take care, everybody.
Right.
Bye-bye. Bye. To the man.